what's going on out there, everybody. And thanks again so much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, my brother from another mother who is... Sounds like he's dying over here, folks. Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm right here. Filio Filson in the house. I've got a little cough going on.
Hey, but it's southern wind.
Is that what it is?
I heard about in the weather patterns and whatnot, with all that southern wind we've got, it's blowing a lot of cedar and whatnot up from the hill country.
Well, whatever it is, always this time of year, I'm either sneezing or sniffling or coughing. And today I feel like I've been hacking on everything. But I'll get through it. Not a big deal. What have you been up to?
Man, oh man, just living it up. I've been doing some stuff here around the house and helping the wife with some things. And that's about it. Doing some editing, doing a lot of editing for a friend and just pretty much all around trying to stay busy. Here's what's wild. I had everything planned and lined out because I expected the weather to be crappy, right?
Yeah.
Cold weather, you plan everything like I'll be able to sit in studio and knock it all out. Well, now the weather's been amazing.
It has been.
And I'm stuck inside.
Yeah.
No, so I'll work for a little bit and then I'll take a 5-minute break and I'll go outside. No lie. This is what I've been doing. I'll work, then I'll run outside and shoot my bow for like 15, 20 minutes. And then I'll come back in and work for like 2-3 hours. And then I'll go back out and shoot again. My hat's off to the people that are just cubicle bound indoors all the time, grinding like that. I don't know how y'all do it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I really don't, man. So hats off to y'all. That's pretty wild. What about you, man? I know you've been bouncing around. I hadn't seen you much.
Yeah, I've been back into the swing of things. You know, like after the new year, we always talk about how it takes a little while to get back into the routine. So that's what I've been trying to do. The kids always got things. They're starting firing back up on all kinds of activities outside of school and stuff. So just been getting along with that. And then I've been trying to get my bow ready for 3D season. I'm not there yet.
No.
I haven't had as much time to contribute to practice as I would like to, but you know, I don't need it working perfectly immediately. So it's not a big deal.
And for those listening right now, we're about to go on with Lon on Phantoms and Monsters Radio on YouTube right now. So, well, I say right now, we're going to go on after we record the show and all that. So when you hear this, if you haven't tuned in live, you can jump back and check it out. What we get to talk to Lon about and hang out with him for a little while.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be on YouTube. So that'll be pretty fun.
It'll be fun. I'm ready to visit with him.
How long has it been since we've been on there?
A good bit.
I want to say it was like last year around this time, but I'm not for sure. But anyways, Lon's a great guy, and man, it's a heck of a source for stories. I love that website.
Dude, he has got so much. We always talked about Albert Rosales and now Lon. Like, those guys have so much information. It's ridiculous. Like, it is truly a library of all that information.
You know, I get emails all the time about Albert Rosales. Like, people are trying to find the site, and I have to tell them, like, man, I'm sorry. I think he's taken it all down.
Yeah, I don't think it's there anymore.
Now, you can still get a lot of the stories in book form if you go to Amazon and look up Albert Rosales. He's got a lot of the flying humanoid collection and stuff.
It's worth it. If you're into collecting those kind of stories and whatnot, it's worth it. Because there's stuff that was on that site and in those books that you're not going to find anywhere else.
Like, I think over 17,000 sightings.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It was something crazy. And I mean, they're all cataloged by date, too, like going back to the 1800s.
Pretty wild.
Very, very wild. Speaking of wild,
yeah,
check this out.
Oh, here we go.
It says, I believe it was 2005. I was driving around at approximately 12:30 a.m. with three of my friends in my car. We stopped so my friend and I could relieve ourselves off of an old dirt road just off of the main road. Now, I knew the driveway was there, having seen it during the daytime. It was just a place where the town of Farmington would dump old asphalt. I was on the driver's side of my car, my friend on the passenger side, and both of us looking in the opposite directions. I saw something on the top of a small hill, maybe 50 feet in front of me. I thought it was a tree initially, but it turned and started moving from my left to my right. It was very tall, at least 8 feet, maybe even 10. It had extremely long arms that stretched down to its knees. It was gray or white in color and had somewhat of a small head. The words that came to me were, "What the hell is that?" But before I could utter those words, my friend said, "What the hell is that?" I turned to get back into the car, which I left running, but the headlights off, and I saw another one in the direction he was facing. It was absolutely terrifying, and if I had a gun with me, I wouldn't have done anything different. I would have done the same thing, get in my car and drive away as fast as possible. The other people in my car caught a glimpse of these creatures, but not as well as my friend Rob and I. Now, initially, I could only assume that they were aliens. They did not look like a monkey or Bigfoot or anything like that. They had no fur or hair, but were skinny and just very scary looking. I assumed that they were very dangerous, and of all the time I've spent outdoors in the woods and in rural or mountainous areas, I've never seen anything like those things. After that, I hadn't seen Rob in several years, as we lost contact with each other. I ran into him at a gas station about 8 years later, and the first thing he said to me was, "Hey, do you remember when we saw those things out in the middle of nowhere?" The memory to him was just the same as mine, and upon seeing me, that was the first thing that popped into his mind. The same thing as me. Recently, speaking to a friend of mine who has lots of interest in the supernatural and paranormal, I told her the story, and she suggested that they were probably skinwalkers. She found some pictures that were animated of what they might look like. I definitely think that that is what we saw out there that night. I would absolutely love some sort of insight into what these things are and why they may have even been there. It does terrify me to think that they might have had some kind of ominous purpose or could have been dangerous, but I still would like to know. Thanks for taking the time to read and share this. I will attach the picture my friend Bailey sent me, which is a very good depiction of what I saw. Also, I will send you the exact location of where this encounter occurred. Thank you very much. Sincerely, Nick Culotta. Well, thanks, Nick. I took a look at the picture, and it looks like the typical picture of like a pale crawler or
for real
something, you know, skinwalker, you know, depiction like that. And I checked out the GPS coordinates he sent me, and this happened just outside of Rochester, New York. So in New York State.
Crawlers. You
know, not far from Buffalo.
So. Crawlers.
But again, like, you know, this is the same question that lots of people have. You know, is it alien? Is it extraterrestrial? Is it something else? What were they doing out there? He said it was like a dumping area for old asphalt. So I'm assuming it's like the precinct, like the county precinct.
They're
there,
dumping, you know, fault out there. What kind of fault they dumping?
Yeah, I don't know.
Asphalt?
Yeah, asphalt.
Man.
And but so what were these things out there doing? I don't know.
It's always something like that, though.
That's
right. It's like something so mundane and just nonchalant. You look up and there they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got, okay, if we're going to do crawlers, since we're going to be talking to Lon and whatnot, there's one from Pennsylvania, between an 8 and 10 foot tall one that someone reported. Now look, up there in Pennsylvania, man, y'all got some names up there for some towns. Now I'm not even joking. I thought we were bad. Taconic. Pennsylvania?
It's probably Native American.
Probably so. It's got to be. If not, whoever wrote that needs to have their head looked at. Anyway, listen to this. It says the date was January 10th, 2021. It was a cold night with a slight fog outside of my hometown of Tunkhannock in northeast Pennsylvania. Many nights I like to take long walks in order to clear my mind from the busy day. I walked on the rural road by this large patch of woods not far from my home. On my right is an old building with two small wooden houses beside it. And as I'm looking, I notice movement. Well, then I see an 8 to 10 foot tall, pale white figure briskly walk across the road from one of the houses to the woods about 50 feet from me. Now, I know I saw something, so I quickly continue forward. Whatever it was, I wanted nothing to do with it, and now I wanted to get home as fast as possible. Well, a minute or two later, I look up, and again I see this pale figure that is now on all fours, but still 5 foot tall at the shoulder. Now, it's about 100 feet in the woods to the left of me. It had bleached white skin, a bald head, and huge black eyes. It had a human face and body, except it looked extremely emaciated, and its arms were like super long. It started to sway its body back and forth like a mantis. This is when I ran as fast as I could. I only looked back after I ran for a solid 5 minutes, and I don't believe it had chased me. I was very close to home, and I was concerned that this pale humanoid was lurking about so near to where I lived. I had no idea, or I have no idea, what I saw, but I know that this thing was real, that it wasn't an apparition. I know that you've been writing or written a book about these pale crawler humanoids, and I wonder if this may be what you described as a crawler. Thanks, HH. So he'd sent this in to Lon. Of course, Lon, man, Climberman, crawlers, yeah, all of this.
Right.
I like how they pointed out, H points out, this wasn't an apparition. I could tell
right.
that it was a physical creature.
Yeah.
But yet it's not. You see what I'm saying? Like, look, it's just like there's no record. There's it never leaves sight. It's physical at that moment. I don't know. It's the strangest sightings. And these crawlers have been going on like the Watchers in the Woods for years.
Yes.
What the heck could they possibly be? So they see a crawler. Disson sees a crawler. There's crawlers everywhere, truly. Like, it's almost like the Rake.
Right, which they say is made up. It's, you know, it's on a creepypasta thing. But then there are these sightings that people are the creepypastas, they named it the Rake. But these pale crawlers, or whatever the yeah. name you want, a moniker yeah. you want to give it, there's been sightings for a
long
time.
They've been around for a hot minute, yes.
Yeah, so I don't know what it is. Is it, you know, is it some kind of demon? Is it?
It does feel like something.
Demonic, right?
Yeah, but it feels, not, if they had a hierarchy, these feel like they're just infantrymen.
Yeah, right? Possibly,
like,
yeah.
Like they're going out and collecting the fear. Because like I said, every one of these things, or at least you get reported because the people that go missing don't get reported, but it does feel like yeah. all of these are somehow doing this, knowing the anxiety and the energy and the pressure, everything it puts on you that it can feed from.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't agree. Know. It's weird.
Speaking of weird,
yeah.
You know how we talk about all the time that scientists are trying to bring back the woolly mammoth.
Yes, of course.
Well, apparently it's going to happen, and it's going to really? Happen really soon. A listener of ours named Barry sent me a link to this website, and it's pretty interesting. Are you familiar with a place called Pleistocene Park?
No.
Okay, I wasn't either. This is a real place. It's in Russia.
Oh, well, I'll never see that.
Well, you might, because they are going to be reintroducing the mammoth. And they said that they think that the first woolly mammoth will be born by 2024.
What?
Yeah, they've used CRISPR, and they're yeah. using like an Asian elephant as a surrogate, and they are going to be able to bring these things back.
Wow.
And they're going to be this Pleistocene Park. They're not just bringing back mammoths. They're bringing back all types of animals that once existed there. And they're going to help the environment. Apparently, all that megafauna being gone has actually hurt that area. It's hurting the planet. Like, a lot of CO2 okay. is being released because the permafrost is melting. And by reintroducing these animals, it's going to make it back to like a steppe, like it was. Like, now it's a lot of forest because the mammoths aren't there to trample mm-hmm. down the trees, right?
Yeah.
So check this out. This is on their actual Pleistocene Park's website. It says that during the last ice age, high productive grazing ecosystems dominated most of the planet. It said high animal density, which can now be seen only in a few national parks in Africa, like the Serengeti, were on every single continent. And the largest of all these ecosystems was the Mammoth Steppe, which spanned from Spain to Canada and from the Arctic islands to China. They said millions of mammoths, bisons, horses, reindeers, wolves, and tigers maintained these grasslands. And now this disappeared 14,500 years ago, which kind of fits with what Graham mm-hmm. Hancock and Randall Carlson are talking about. The stuff went away. And now for the first time, they have an ability to repopulate this area with extinct animals. They're going to bring these back, not just mammoths, but these extinct bisons, kind of like the guy that was in the boneyard in Alaska yeah, was talking yeah. about. All these things.
The steppe bison.
And they're going to reverse the ecosystem. They said that happened around 10,000 years ago. Now, they said it's going to take some time, but their operation, their hope is the restoration of these pasture ecosystems in the Arctic that can have a cooling effect on the climate. I had no idea what they're talking about. It's like, well, how can bringing back animals make it cooler? But apparently, they can. Apparently, according to this website, that the animals being around and eating the organic matter and then all this other stuff, the trampling down of the trees and the plants, all of this helps maintain the permafrost, which right now is melting at a rapid rate. And I'm not a, you know, I'm not a scientist, but I know you can go to their website, Pleistocene Park, and check it out. But it's very interesting. Can you imagine that in 2 years, they're going to have a real woolly mammoth living and breathing?
Yeah, I've seen this movie before. They get loose, and then they go put them on an island, and then they kill a bunch of people, and they put them on another island. I'm not going.
But they're not bringing back velociraptors and stuff. They're bringing back mammoths.
Sure, I mean, they're not.
Well, right, right. They're starting with it. So if this...
There's going to be short-faced bears running people down with machine guns on their back.
So the plan is to bring these, reintroduce these animals. But I'm with you. It's like, how long until they start reintroducing things different, like saber-toothed cats?
Well, you and I discuss all the time how humans are. Like, we love to just tinker with things we have no business tinkering with. There's no reason to do these things.
Other than to see if you can do it.
To see if you can do it, right? Like, you just do silly things. This is one of those deals. I'm all for science, but I'm not so sure that bringing back a lot of that stuff is such a good idea. Like, isn't there regular elephants that you can introduce and help, like, today's elephants and help grow them in the trouble that they're having? Are you just going to – look, I hate to play devil's advocate. I'm just saying.
I think that the Asian elephant and the African elephant don't work up in the Arctic, but these mammoths will, and that's why they're bringing them back. And they said – it says on here, if they're successful – they're going to open these parks up over here. They're going to reintroduce them in Alaska, them up in Canada.
Well, we'll talk about the American Serengeti.
I mean, you're going to have to change the big super slam because you're going to have to add mammoths to it, right? If they're going to start growing them in 2 years, how long until hunters start trying to hunt them?
10 years.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Because you're going to be a guy, if you're a real baller, you're going to be like, well, you ain't got a mammoth head on your wall, but I do. How long and such?
Exactly.
You know, like the dentist that paid $130,000 to kill a black rhino?
Yeah.
What do you think a mammoth's going to go for?
I don't know. I just feel, you know what it is? It's probably because it's all the propaganda that's been beat into us ever since Jurassic Park that makes me leery of these things. That's probably what it was.
One of my first questions was, well, of course, the thylacine.
Yeah.
And they said, well, actually, you know, even though the thylacine may still be alive, they said, actually, it's a lot harder to bring that thing back than the mammoth because...
What are you going to cross it with?
They don't have a surrogate. Like, the animal that's closest to it, I'm not familiar with which marsupial it is, but it's, like, small, where a thylacine's large, so you can't have it as a surrogate.
Folks, he's moving his hands. If you could see, you could tell what size he's telling y'all.
So it's actually going to be...
You don't got to cross your arms, bro.
It'll be harder... harder to bring back the thylacine than it would be the woolly mammoth.
I can understand that. Yeah, that makes sense because that's like the only thing that was like it.
Yeah, so.
I would love to, a thylacine's another of those things that I would love to see.
Oh, I would too.
Heck, a mammoth. I'm down for checking out a mammoth.
I would definitely go and see one. If they had them like in America, like say they were in the plains of Montana, I mean, I would definitely go check it out.
You could drive up there and just watch them.
Be at Yellowstone.
That would be pretty wild.
Yeah. I mean, there's no more circuses anymore, so.
That would definitely be pretty crazy. Like the one we used to go to as kids that was out there at my house.
The Carson and Barnes?
Yeah.
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 I probably got the world's smallest
giant. They're not around, and I don't know the size, dude.
I don't know the reason, but I have a feeling that there probably was some kind of lawsuit.
There was some mishandling of funds that took place there. Maybe. Who knows?
They weren't on the up and up, you know, back when they were still traveling carnivals like that.
We used to skip school when we were kids, remember, and watch them set up the tent. Because they had the elephants dragging them out and all that stuff. It was crazy. And then we used to go ride those rides. They just looked like a bunch of carnies that were half spun off, was bolting them all together. We were like, let's get on them. It looked like that.
Because that's what it was.
Because that's exactly what was happening.
Well, speaking of extinct animals that may not be, let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to be talking about some animals that might not be extinct.
Ooh.
Keep listening, folks. Stick with us. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. With Expanded Perspectives. A couple of weeks ago, maybe it was a couple months ago, we did an episode called Pioneers and Prehistoric Beasts, where we introduced some tales of dinosaurs like in cowboy times. And it sparked a lot of emails that came in. And so I knew that I needed to do another episode with some more strange stories of prehistoric extinct animals alive and well in a developing world and nation, in particular, North America. I know a lot of people will say that these stories are all fabrications in order to sell newspapers, which I'm not denying that. That has definitely happened, and much with a similar line of thought with that is the sightings of all the giants and the bones of giants being found. They were sensationalized, and a lot of newspapers were simply publishing these stories to sell copies of their paper, which makes sense. But, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And over the years, if I've learned anything doing this show, is a lot of things labeled conspiracy theories, after some time, have turned out to be fact. So perhaps some of these stories are real. I'm not saying that they are, I'm saying perhaps they are. I'd like to think that they are, but they're still interesting nonetheless. And a lot of these local legends and things like that, whether they were real or unreal, the lore around them survives to this very day. Like in Utah, have you ever heard of the Bear Lake Monster? Check this out. The Mormon pioneer is unquestionably one of the great staples of the American West. The Mormon pioneers migrated westward to Utah after it became a territory of the United States following the Mexican-American War in 1846. The Mormons had decided to relocate after the assassination of their leader, Joseph Smith, in Carthage, Illinois, in 1844. A huge wagon train of 70,000 settlers set off for the West in April 1847. As they traveled along the shores of Bear Lake in Utah, they saw some rather strange things in the water. And this wasn't just the common folk, but even Wilford Woodruff and John Taylor, future presidents of the church, claimed that they saw the monster too. Eventually, Brigham Young, president of the church since 1847, after Smith's death, would become involved in a quest to solve the mystery of the Bear Lake Monster. Though Young undoubtedly had to hear of the monster, or rather monsters, in Bear Lake, he didn't begin to take a direct interest in the matter until the mid-1870s. He must have known about it before then, though. Take, for example, an article published in the Desert News on July 31st, 1868. It says, "The Indians have a tradition concerning a strange, serpent-like creature inhabiting the waters of Bear Lake, which they say carried off some of their braves many moons ago. Since then, they will not sleep close to the lake. Neither will they swim in it, nor let their squaws and papooses bathe in its waters. Now it seems this water devil, as the Indians called it, has again made an appearance. A number of our white settlers declare that they have seen it with their own eyes. This Bear Lake Monster, they now call it, is causing a great deal of excitement up here." S.M. Johnson at South Eden was riding along the lake the other day when he saw something a number of yards out in the lake, which he thought was the body of a man. He waited for the waves to wash it in, but to his surprise, found the water washed over it without causing it to move. Then he saw it had a head and a neck like some strange animal. On each side of the head were ears, or bunches the size of a pint cup. He concluded the body must be touching the bottom of the lake. By this time, however, Johnson seems to have been leaving the place so rapidly, he failed to observe other details. The next day, three women and a man saw a monstrous animal in the lake near the same place, but this time it was swimming at an incredible speed. According to their statement, it was moving faster than a horse could run. On Sunday last, N.C. Davis and Alan Davis of St. Charles, Thomas Slate and James Collings of Paris, with six women, were returning from Fish Haven when about midway from the latter place to St. Charles, their attention was suddenly attracted to a peculiar motion of waves on the water about 3 miles distant. The lake was not rough, only a little disturbed by the wind. Now, Mr. Slate says he distinctly saw the sides of a very large animal that he would suppose to be not less than 90 feet in length. Mr. Davis is positive it must not have been less than 40 feet in length, judging by the waves it rolled up on both sides of it as it swam, and the wave it left in the rear. It was going south, and all agreed it swam with a speed almost incredible to their senses. Mr. Davis says he never saw a locomotive travel faster, and thinks it made a mile a minute. In a few minutes after the discovery of the first, a second followed in its wake. But this one seemed much smaller, appearing to Mr. Slate about the size of a horse. A larger one followed this, and so on, until before disappearing, it made a sudden turn to the west, a short distance, then back to its former track. At this turn, Mr. Slate says he could distinctly see it was of brown color. They could judge somewhat of the speed by observing known distances on the opposite side of the lake. And they all agree that the velocity with which these monsters propelled themselves was astounding. They represent the waves rolling up on each side as about 3 feet in height. This is subsequently their statement, as they told me. Messrs. Davis and Slate are prominent men, well known in the county, and all of them are reliable persons whose veracity is undoubted. I have no doubt they would be willing to make affidavits to their statements. Wow, what a strange article, right? Here's another one. This one in the Latter-day Saints Millennial Star, which was a Mormon publication, ran a report on the monster in Volume 30 in 1868. It was titled The Monsters of Bear Lake. We've had a conversation with Brother Charles C. Rich and other brethren from Bear Lake Valley respecting the monsters which have been seen in the lake, an account of which from the pen of Brother Joseph C. Rich was published in the Evening News some short time ago. They all firmly believe that the account as published, they consider the testimony that has been given by so many individuals in the area who have seen these creatures in so many places and under a variety of circumstances as indisputable. They would believe these persons upon any other subject, and they cannot withhold their credence, incredible as the existence of such monsters may appear, from what they say they saw in the lake. We should conclude that there are very few, if any, persons in Bear Lake Valley who doubt the statements which have been made. The Indians' traditions corroborate all that has been said of these creatures. It is well known that the Indians will not camp near the lake. They have never been known to bathe in its waters. They have persisted in stating that there were terrible monsters in the lake, of which there were in fear, two of their tribe having, within the memory of some of their number, been carried off by them. If one or two persons had only seen and described them, it might be set down, even if they were persons of good judgment and credibility, as an optical delusion. But they have been lately seen by numbers and several different times and places, and their descriptions agree. And they also agree with the accounts of the Indians. Various plans have been suggested for the capture of one or more of them, but no attempt has yet been made. We hope that some plan may be devised that will be successful. Until the question of their existence is settled and something learned of their nature and habits, if such monsters are actually there, the lake will not be a very common place of resort for fishermen. One of those who are said to have seen them last timed their speed while passing from one well-known point to another on the other side of the lake with his watch, and if the description can be relied upon, a boat would stand no chance of escaping if they were pursued or came in contact with it. Our readers, who are familiar with the accounts we have published of these creatures, can form their own conclusions, respecting them. The accounts are fishy, decidedly so, but we cannot dispute the persons who make them. Some of the persons who have seen them were known, and their truthfulness is unquestionable. We must believe they saw something remarkable. Whether monsters or not, we hope time will soon decide. See? It's kind of like what I was saying earlier is, you know, are these stories simply being made up, or perhaps there is some truth to it? There's, you know, once again, the indigenous people of the area. I don't know why so many times we go to some country, some jungle somewhere, and there'll be an indigenous culture there, and they'll claim these exotic animals exist, and we just poo-poo it away and say, nah, they're crazy. That's impossible. Maybe they're not making it up. Maybe there's no monsters there at the time of these sightings, but there used to be. But it's definitely in the indigenous people's folklore that there were monsters in this lake. And then there's several of these Mormon pioneers trekking across the West, and they too are making these outlandish claims that they saw some kind of monster in the lake. And the, you know, the newspaper article says, like, it does sound kind of fishy, but the people that are making these claims are well respected in the area. So why would they be making it up? We say the same thing on our show. Sometimes I meet people, it's not on the air, it's not recorded. They meet me at a convention or something, and they'll tell me an incredible story or experience they had. They don't profit from it, so why make it up? I'd like to think that there probably is some kind of monster in the area during the mid-1870s. I think it's pretty cool. So at some point, there was a plan to capture this beast, whatever it was, and there was an article back in 1869, September 30th, 1869, to be exact, called the Desert News. And they published the following story. Check this out. The title of the story was Plans for Its Capture. It says, Mr. Cook, the Lord being his helper, proposes to capture one of these anomalies next summer, not being fixed for the business at present. His plan is to have a large bearded hook made, to which will be attached about 20 feet of cable chain and 300 yards of inch rope. At the end of this rope will be a large buoy with a flagstaff inserted and a sinker to keep the staff in a perpendicular position. The stars and stripes will float from the staff. To this buoy will be connected 100 yards of three-quarter rope, which will be fastened to the switch end of a tree located on the shore, the hook being baited with a leg of a mutton or a young Indian, and it'll have to sink 20 feet in the water by means of a smaller buoy. This will complete the plan. When the monster swallows the bait, he will necessarily take in a few yards of the cable chain. This will prevent him from biting off the rope, and as the cable will no doubt be heavy on his stomach, he will back out, which will have the effect of fastening the hook into his vitals. About this time will be some small squirming and pulling. If anything breaks, it must be the small rope between the flag buoy and the beach. He has still 900 feet of rope to play on, and the large buoy can be followed by the flag all over the lake, or until he concludes to give up. Others propose erecting dead falls at different places in the lake. If these plans all fail, I shall draw one of them up near the shore with a spyglass and harpoon it, or will sublet the capturing business to N.F. Austin, who will run the lake through a fine strainer and starve him to death for want of water. So, again, this kind of reminds me of the movie Jaws. Remember when they have those floating buoys and they use a spear gun? This is kind of what they were going to do. They were going to use a hook. They talk about using basically a steel leader so it can't bite through the rope. And they were talking about using these buoys to at least mark where it's at in the lake, right? So very ingenious. Very, very cool. So there was never any other articles talking about whether they were able to capture the creature. There was no other articles about what happened the following summer, but there are still legends in that area that there's a lake monster. You know, lots of lakes have these monsters, whether it's the Loch Ness Monster or Champ.
or Pepe or wherever you go, Pi Pi. I'm not sure how it's pronounced, but it's another water cryptid. But again, were there some actual sightings of some sort of, I don't know, plesiosaur in the lake? Or, you know, was it just a giant sturgeon? And the people not knowing what sturgeons were assumed it was a dinosaur. I don't know. Very interesting. Let's move on. Though overshadowed today by Tyrannosaurus and Velociraptors, back in its day, the Iguanodon was one of the better known dinosaurs. This is in large part because it is the first dinosaur to ever be recognized and named by modern man. The first Iguanodon fossils were discovered by Mary Ann Mantell, the wife of a country doctor, while her husband was out on a call in England in 1822. Or so the legend says. Some say that's something of a folktale, and that Dr. Mantell himself found the teeth of the ancient beast. Whoever found them, doesn't matter, the doctor thought that the teeth belonged to a giant crocodile. After it was officially recognized by science as an iguanodon, the beast became quite popular. It was one of the more famous dinosaur sculptures made by Benjamin Waterhouse Hawkins on the New Year's Eve of 1853. He even held a dinner party on the inside of his iguanodon sculpture. Hawkins invited 21 guests, all men, several of them being scientists, to enjoy an 8-course meal within the model. Now, due to the creature's popularity at the time, as far as dinosaurs went, it was somewhat surprising that it took someone until 1892 to claim of a live sighting of such a monster. What I'm trying to say is, as common as iguanodon bones were, that particular species of dinosaur would be a good candidate for a faux sighting as opposed to a pterosaur or plesiosaur, the usual suspects in the realm of remnant dinosaurs. And if you were to concoct such a hoax, why not set it in somewhere like Death Valley? The valley was so named in 1849 by miners during the California Gold Rush, and local legends via the Timbisha Shoshone Indians says that Death Valley was once a lush and beautiful valley, ruled over by a beautiful but vain queen. She wanted to build a temple, rivaling that of the Aztecs, to the south and force her people to work, increasingly, even her own daughter, until it was finished. In her dying death, the daughter cursed her mother, and nature then revolted against the queen. The sun's rays became so hot that Death Valley transformed into a harsh desert that we know it today. Add to this, there was a rumor to be a lost underground city, a city of giants, located somewhere in Death Valley. And you have one very good strange place for strange sightings to occur. All that was lacking was some good old dinosaur sightings, but there were. Check this out from an article in a San Francisco Examiner. It published a statement by George May in relation to a huge reptile that had been seen near the town of Daggett. E.W. Speer had discovered a peculiar trail, and following it came upon a giant creature, unlike anything he had the pleasure of meeting. He describes it as 30 feet long and thoroughly unprepossessing. Speer withdrew without formality and told his story, only to be laughed at. Later, Henry Brown saw the same monster, and Mr. Brown scratched the desert sands right hastily in retreat. At the time Mr. May left Daggett, a party was being organized to hunt this strange denizen of the valley. Oscar W. Clark, who has been spending some time in Daggett and who has been making geological researches along the coast in the interest of the Royal Academy of Sciences, was on his way to Coronado to take a rest. Mr. Clark has made a number of journeys into Death Valley and was one of the parties who saw the same gigantic monster. He has sent the result of his experiences to the Smithsonian Institution with a view to having a party sent out here to endeavor to capture this monster. The announcement of the experiences of the Messrs. Speer and Brown rather anticipated me, a Mr. Clark recently said. I had a fine opportunity of seeing the strange denizen of that mysterious land known only as Death Valley Desert, and I desire, to say that this animal is the most wonderful living proof of the exact authenticity of the researches made by savants into the field of paleontology study. This animal is really the only living link between prehistoric times and the present. It is virtually a marvel of the ages, an eighth wonder of the world, a marvelous illustration of the profound economy of nature. It was 6 weeks ago that I had the pleasure of seeing this remarkable animal. I was some 30 miles distant from Daggett and stopped at 6 o'clock in the evening to rest, having made some valuable additions to my collection of fossil remains. Happening to glance to the southwest, through the haze in a peculiar part of the desert, I saw a strange body moving along about 1 mile away. I went toward it and was soon both elated and horrified by seeing an animal fully 30 feet long that differed from any of the known forms of the present epoch. It was an immense monster, walking part of the time on its hind feet, and at times dragging itself through the sand and leaving tracks of a three-toed foot and a peculiar scratchy configuration in the sand whenever it changed its form of locomotion and dragged itself. The forelimbs of the animal were extremely short, and it occasionally grasped the nearest scrub and devoured it. The thumb of the three-prolonged forefoot was evidently a strong conical spine that would be a very dangerous weapon if it had decided to attack. Whenever the animal stood upright, it was fully 14 feet high. The head was as large as a good-sized cask and was shaped somewhat like a horse, while the body was large as that of an elephant, with a long tail extending from its hindquarters, something like that of an alligator. When I saw it, the strange animal was on the edge of a great sinkhole of alkaline water. A sinkhole, by the way, that my guides told me was a bottomless pit, and evidently a remnant of the days when Death Valley was an inland sea. I approached within 100 yards of the monster, crawling very cautiously over the sand, and I watched it fully half of an hour. Suddenly the beast began to bellow, and the sound was of a terrifying and blood-curdling character. Its immense eyes, fully as large as saucers, projected from its head and gleamed like a wild, furious fire, while from its enormous mouth of the monster, streams of steam-like vapor were exhaled, and as if they drifted towards one alluvia was something awful. The animal was liver color, with bronze-like spots. The monster dragged itself to the edge of the sinkhole and lashed its tail, and finally fell off into a quiescent condition. I left the scene and attempted to secure the assistance of my guides in an effort to capture this monster, but they were absolutely terrified and refused to do anything. From what I saw of the animal, I'm perfectly satisfied that it is one of the species of an iguanodon of the European Jurassic, an animal presenting many points of structure in common with an iguana of today. In fact, that is the report I've sent in, and knowing full well the geological environments of the Pacific Slope and the very remarkable and peculiar condition regarding Death Valley, I'm satisfied that my deductions are correct and that there is today, living in the desert of Death Valley, one of the most remarkable animals now on the face of the globe. None other than one of the monsters of the prehistoric epoch, a wonder of the centuries. Wow. Quite an outlandish claim, right? This guy's in Death Valley. Now, I've never been to Death Valley. I know it's called Death Valley because it gets incredibly hot there. If you don't have any water and stuff in a very short amount of time, you're going to be in some real trouble. But imagine seeing a giant reptile, right? He says it's stands up on its back feet. It's 14 feet tall. You know, it's 30 feet long. It's like a giant Gila monster or a giant iguana. But he's saying, look, no matter how crazy it sounds, I saw this thing. There's an iguanodon, a dinosaur from the Jurassic era there in Death Valley. Now, It's an outlandish claim. Was he making it up? Sure, he could have. Did he physically really see an iguanodon? I don't see how, but I guess it's possible. Or was he seeing, like, so many times in strange sightings? It's like the ghost. He saw a ghost of an iguanodon. Like, if people can die and you can see their spirits, why couldn't you see the spirit of an iguanodon? There's lots of reports of people seeing ghosts of their pets that they once owned. So why not an iguanodon? Or maybe it's not a ghost. It's like a replay in time, like a glitch in time, like a time slip, where once that was a lush jungle area and there were iguanodons feasting, and he's seeing the replay of that. Or there's a giant dinosaur in Death Valley. I don't know. Pretty strange. Speaking of dinosaurs, ghosts, are you aware of the Beast of the Badlands? Check this out. In case you didn't know, many tribes of Native Americans revered and even feared dinosaur bones, as though they possessed some mysterious or terrifying power. Most tales of deadly dinosaur bones come through courtesy of the South Dakota Badlands. Though Native American tribes had been finding mysterious giant bones for years, they weren't discovered by settlers until the 1840s. During that decade, many trappers traversed the Badlands on their way to or from either Fort Pierre or Fort Laramie. The first widely publicized find was in 1843 by Alexander Culbertson of the American Fur Company. He sent his find, later identified as the jawbone of a Paleotherium, to Dr. Hiram A. Prout. Years later, in 1846, Prout published that his findings, which incite the White River Badlands to become a very popular hunting ground for fossils. Now, this tradition carries on even until this day. The Native Americans of the area, however, believed that the fossils should be left undisturbed. In 1906, the ethnologist James Owen Dorsey gathered tales of enormous serpents from the Lakota tribe. The Lakota believed that the bones of these enormous serpents could strike a person blind, dead, or crazy. They were not something to meddle with. On the other hand, some medicine men used fossils for medicine and magic. However, there was a catch. To use the fossil, they believed it should be found sticking out of the ground. But if you dug deep into the ground to remove a fossil, you violated the integrity of the earth. Some bones of the Badlands were exhumed purely for harmful purposes. These tales were unearthed by Sebastian Bronco LeBeau, a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux, a tribe, as he studied the Agate Springs fossil beds. Legend had it that a spot called Carnegie Hill, a mythical figure called Ganaski, hid behind the hill as he watched a tribe of the first people walk by. Ganaski grabbed a dinosaur bone and magically projected it into the body of a young man within the tribe. Later, the young man began to behave as though possessed, acting violent and erratic. The tribe medicine man, Wada, figured out what was going on and removed the splinter of the prehistoric bone from his body. And the young man was instantly cured. From that day forward, Wada warned his people against the evil fossil magic that could be accomplished through the stinging ceremony. The tribe also avoided Carnegie Hill, but the belief that the Badlands was not a location to be taken lightly carried over into the 21st century. Researcher Adrienne Mayer met one Eldon Little Moon, who told her that most people won't travel in the Badlands at night. They say there are some strange animals, like none you've seen anywhere else, maybe still alive from the dinosaur days. Snakes as big as telephone poles. Sometimes you see them at night going across the road. Speaking of strange things crossing the road, a South Dakota farmer claimed to have seen something resembling either a plesiosaur or an apatosaurus cross the road in front of his tractor in broad daylight in 1934. Long before that, South Dakota residents also told of tales of a serpentine monster in Devil's Lake. So, the area is plagued by ghosts of dinosaurs. The local tribes in the area claim they're not physical, but if you go through the Badlands at night, you run the chance of running into ghosts of these dinosaurs. So, again, the local indigenous people speak about giant serpents. Now, these stories are passed down from generation to generation, and they believe that these are the ghosts of some of these creatures that once existed. So they even know that these things aren't physical, but they can still cause you harm. And I've definitely not heard of digging up bones and using it to cast spells on people. That is insane. I wonder if some of the sightings of modern day dinosaurs being seen in modern times is nothing more than the ghosts of something from the past, or perhaps a glitch in time. I don't know, but not all stories are the same. Perhaps some are those are ghosts and then other ones are physical beings. I don't know. I don't think it's very likely for there to be a living dinosaur in Death Valley now, or even in the 1870s. I just don't think that that's a thing. I think a lot of times with these lake monsters, everybody who listens to the show knows that water cryptids are probably my least favorite of all the cryptids. I think a lot of the time it's just misidentification because it's the water, right? You can't really get a good look at something unless you're in the water with it. But I, for one, would like to believe that there are still some dinosaurs probably living in the ocean, like, you know, Megalodon. I totally believe that it's possible for Megalodon to be in the ocean because we know so little about the ocean. Also, I'd like to believe that Mokelium Bembe is out there somewhere. If not now, maybe 50, 60, 100 years ago, he was still there. That would be very cool. I hope you guys like those stories. Let's take a break. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives.
So, wow.
Crazy stories of animals that were seen that were supposed to be long gone but may not be. And it's still the question still remains today. If you go to the Congo, you know, Mokelium Bembe and like other places. I mean, there's those sightings of like a T-Rex mm-hmm. in South Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Just a couple years ago.
Do you think those are time slips like we've talked about or over, you know, like overlaps from different maybe – I don't know, fractured timelines of what we're in. Because, you know, there's a big conspiracy that ever since the Large Hadron Collider, whatever, was turned on, that's whenever we fractaled.
I've heard that, you know, and that's where we get the Mandela effect.
Yeah,
and
that's the reason some remember some things and some of us don't, is that not all of us got to go, and that's where it kind of separated everything.
I don't know. I understand.
Or we're just crazy.
That theory is awesome. I will tell you this, like, I do believe that the thylacine is not extinct. I believe that there's some out there because there's lots of farmers and herders and things like in the area that I've seen on several interviews and read about that said, oh, yeah, we've seen them.
Yeah. You
know? And I can believe that. Now, a T-Rex living in South Texas, no, I unfortunately don't think that's a real thing. Now, it doesn't mean that somebody didn't see it because, like you said, it's a time slip or replaying of a lost memory. Past memory, but physically out there, no, I can't believe that.
Sounds pretty wild.
But I mean, it'd be crazy.
I hope so.
It'd be crazy if some Mexican cartel south of the Texas border, well, they just wanted the ultimate pet, and they hired these North Korean
scientists.
The guys
scientists that built the mammoths to they, build yeah. them a bunch of velociraptors.
And they built them some velociraptors, and they got loose, and now they're down in South Texas. Oh. Now, as cool of a story as that is, and I hope that would happen— I don't think anything like that.
That's the only way you could one up Pablo Escobar's hippos.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only way is if you had dinosaurs.
Well, that's what those guys do in Africa, right? They got the pet hyenas.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, you got a pit bull? Oh, oh, yeah.
You got, when you see you a dude walk Corso, around carrying an AK-47 and a hyena on a chain, that's a bad man.
And it's 10 years old. The kid's 10 years old doing it?
Yeah. You're like, what? Yeah, that's insanity. I got something I want to run past you. I think you're going to enjoy this. This was posted on Vice not even a month ago, and it was something I've been meaning to tell you, and I keep forgetting about it. You and I have been big fans of the LIDAR scans of South America all the way down into all the way down, right? Like the whole thing we've been pumped about when they scan across the jungles. Well, they're talking now that after this, one of the most recent LIDAR scans is that all the archaeologists in this area now have discovered that there is a vast Mayan civilization, which goes back to all the old paperwork like we've talked about, right?
Uh-huh.
Of what people had discussed. When I say vast, I'm talking, they believe that there was more than 1,000 of them that went through there with pyramids. They had ball courts. They had everything. And it's over 2,000 years old that this was a huge area. And when I say huge, folks, Kyle, a square mile is what, a section of land, 640 acres?
640 or 642?
650 square miles is what this encompassed, what they call the lost urban web of over 1,000 settlements in this area, linked by this big causeway that's in the jungle.
Yeah, I've heard that some people estimate that there was over 10 million people living in South America.
Yes.
You know, 14,000 years ago.
Now, this area, I believe, is what they're saying is northern. It's like northwest of Guatemala is where they're actually looking and doing all this. The sad thing is the amount of money it takes to do the LIDAR scans because it's so vast. 650 square miles is a large area.
Very.
That's a pretty good chunk of land. And you flying over, shooting LIDAR and all that stuff. It costs fuel. It costs time. You're paying people and the safety. All of this stuff. This is kind of things that I wish crazy millionaires like Elon or somebody would get into like we've discussed and say, hey, look, let's scan the whole stinking thing. I want to know what's down there. And then you're going to have to fly out and build base camps to be able to even investigate it in some pretty inhospitable land down there, man.
Amazon scares me.
And to think it used to not be that way. It used to be a beautiful, lush jungle, but it was under control. And then when all the people were gone, well, Mother Nature took it back.
Well, you know, and that's a lot of the early explorers talk about El Dorado and these great cities. And then a couple hundred years goes by and, you know, Percy Fawcett and these other guys come back and they like don't find anything or they find some ruins. The original stories, and like some people said, well, they were just made up stories. It wasn't true. It's just because like smallpox like just destroyed everybody.
Yeah.
And so when they came back in 100 years or so, the jungle just takes over. I mean,
with the quickness,
it's crazy. Some of those cities that they found and temples and pyramids that you've ever seen them in South America and down there in Central America as well, where like, oh, we didn't even know this step pyramid was here. This Mayan pyramid. And then they cut all the brush and vines and undergrowth back. And then there that sucker is. You're like, people, we've been walking by this for years, never knew it was here. That's how dense it is.
I always think back to the old tales that we would hear way before we even started the show. You would hear talked about on certain television shows, and you could go find some in old books that they talked about, were like cargo pilots that were flying down in there. And they would always report back that they would see, we saw pyramid tips like glowing in the sun out in the middle of that area. And out there was probably white stone at the top. You could fly over and see it. This is back in the 40s and 50s, right?
Yeah.
And now, of course, almost 100 years later, it's even thicker. LIDAR is the only way you can see it. But they would report flying over and seeing those only to have people go, dude, you're making it up.
Right. It's impossible.
And now you're like, bro, the whole area was full of people. I can't wait to see what they find from not only that, from more of our history, but to see what was lost. There may truly be a giant golden pyramid out there somewhere.
That would be awesome.
There's got to be pyramids that still have, that's not been looted. There's got to be areas out there that people have never set foot on because how do you carry enough on your back? That's the problem. That was always, and as a child, I used to always think it was the ocean till you get older and realize, no, it's not the oceans that are the boundaries. They're the highways.
Right.
It's the stinking mountains and the thick jungles. That's the boundaries because you can't get through it.
Well, and apparently back then, it wasn't a thick jungle.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's a thick jungle now.
Now.
They now know that that, you know.
Oh, it's got roads. I mean, it's beautiful. Aqueducts, all kinds of stuff down through there.
And you mentioned looting. Say there was a pyramid made of gold or a lot of gold anyway. It's not, you know, solid gold. Yeah. And nobody stole anything because it was protected. But once that civilization crumbled, just anybody walking along would be like, well, I'm just going to
take what I need.
Yeah. Because every culture on the planet pretty much knows what gold is.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, which is kind of odd.
Very strange.
Compared to all the precious metals, I mean, gold isn't the most precious, so what is it about gold?
I think it's because it's malleable.
Yeah, very malleable.
Yep.
I mean, are you into the Zachariah Sitchin stuff?
Or I do like the stories. I wouldn't say into it, but I have the books, and I do like the stories.
The alien race needed it for their atmosphere. Is that what it is?
Yeah, to suspend gold particles in their atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah.
It turns out you can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I just love anything that has to do with, of course, this history and the idea. This is that stupid Indiana Jones romanticism in my soul that I would like to believe that that stuff is out there, right?
They're making a new Indiana Jones.
I saw that.
So do you think that the lost city of Z is a real place? Do you think, I mean, I know we'll never know if Percy found it or not, but do you think it was a real place?
I would have to say yes now. By what they're uncovering, now I don't know if it's exactly as described, like we've said, but
sure.
With all the stories that we've heard now, and now this is what they're uncovering, it's just like the mountain gorilla. Stories after stories of mountain gorillas that nobody believed until we finally saw them. Right. And again, I don't know why we have such issue with not wanting to believe the locals, but even locals, it seems, in certain parts of these jungles had no idea this stuff was there because they can only travel so far into it. They can only get so far from fresh water or so far. You can only carry enough on your back. Right. Like we've tried it. You can only carry enough on your back for a certain amount of days. And unless you're just constantly hunter gathering, you really can't make your way through it. And then I'm sure malaria pretty much puts the stop on a bunch of that stuff. Oh. And what are they talking about? Also, the parasites that can come up through your feet that are down in there. Like, look, yeah. That place is not for me.
Not for me.
I'm okay with the LIDAR, but I don't want to go down there.
Nothing.
That place frightens me, man. Like that, you talk about unforgiving. I'll just stick to the mountains and stuff around here.
The Mammoth Step, you know, where it's cold. I'm good with that because there's nothing like that there.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I mean, I know there's bears and polar bears, but to me, that's not as frightening as
Parasites
crawling through the bottoms of my feet.
And that I got to take pills because I got malaria now for the rest of my days and all this stuff. Yeah, it sounds terrible. But again, it probably wasn't that way when it was all completely covered in buildings and was a big metropolis in itself. It wasn't like that. It's just gotten out of control. And we'll probably never see it like that again.
Yeah.
But we will get to see as more people go along and more people get interested, we'll get to see what they uncover.
Well, changing topics. Yeah. I know this has nothing to be, it's not related at all, but I get sent funny stuff sometimes. And our town of Weatherford, Texas, we have a very strange and unusual mascot, or at least it feels that way to me.
Yeah.
Our mascot, our high school mascot, is the Weatherford Kangaroos. Now, it's very odd because when you go to Texas, there's not a lot of schools. I've never heard of one that has a mascot of a kangaroo. And of course, when you're playing all these other teams, you're constantly catching heat because, you know, you're a kangaroo. How scary is that, right? Them not knowing that. Actually, you ever seen kangaroos fight? They're pretty tough.
You ever seen one of those big reds where that dude punches it and he just stands there and stares at him all yoked? You're like, bro,
but anyways, watch out. I don't know if this is has anything to do with it, but I thought that our town had the craziest name, and it turns out there's not. I have here for you the top 20 craziest and most unusual high school mascots in the state of Texas.
Lay it on me, bro.
Are you interested in something like this?
Yes,
right?
Of course.
So, of course, a lot of these people, a lot of these people.
Now, I know one.
A lot of you people, they're not going to know where these towns are, but it's still funny.
I know one.
Okay.
And it's Billy Goats.
Oh, do you know what town it's associated with?
Fredericksburg, Texas. The Battling Billies of Fredericksburg.
Okay, well, they didn't make the top 20.
Oh!
The only one I recognize, there is one on here that you'll recognize that did make the top 20. I'm actually kind of concerned that we didn't make it. But anyways, starting with not too far from Fredericksburg, number 20 is New Braunfels. Their mascot is the New Braunfels Unicorns.
Huh.
Right?
I had no idea. Just so y'all know, there's no unicorns down there. I've been there.
Well, you know, most schools, they pick things like what? Tigers or bears?
Something
or
scary.
Bear cats even.
Yeah.
Something that's scary, right?
You know what it should have been? It should have been like a float tube, the New Braunfels float tubes, because that's where everybody goes to get on the river.
Apparently, there's a town in Texas called Hereford.
Yeah.
And their mascot
is... You've been through it.
The White Faces. They're the Hereford White Faces. The only
thing it's like cows.
That's the only thing
Hereford
I can think
of. Hereford cows got white faces. Hereford's the one that smells. That's where the PSF is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Remember when you drive by it and it's got a little bit of that wang to it in the air?
Yeah. So that's the only thing I, when I, my wife was like, what is that? I'm like, it's got to be because Hereford bald cows faces. Have white faces.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
How about the Central Catholic buttons?
What?
Buttons. Yeah. The Central Catholic
loosen
buttons.
Loosen up my buttons, baby. That's all I can think about when you say
you're gonna
buttons.
Like, you're going to like this one. You know the town of Itasca.
Yes.
They're the Itasca Wampus Cats.
They're bad Wampus Cats, too. Some right? Bad Wampus Cat.
This one's kind of silly. The town is Frost, Texas, and they are the Frost Polar Bears.
Hey, that works.
Right? It works. Here's one. Now, this is one. Now, listen, I'm not making this up. I can't believe this is a real thing.
Okay.
The Robstown. Their mascot is the Robstown Cotton Pickers.
What?
Yeah. I can't believe they're allowed to keep that because,
yeah, that's,
you know, but look, hey, all colors picked cotton at one point. So check this one out. Fort Worth Poly Parrots. Your mascot is a parrot.
I feel like I've seen that somewhere.
Well, Polytechnic is,
yeah,
you know, towards Kennedale, between Fort Worth and Kennedale. So I never knew what the mascot was.
I don't know. That's pretty cool. The Poly Parrots.
Texas City. You know where Texas City is?
Yes, sir.
They are the Texas City Stingrays, which makes sense.
I like that. Yeah, right down there by the coast.
What about the Hamlin Pied Pipers?
Yeah. I thought kangaroo was bad.
The Carrero Gobblers.
Huh. Oh, it's got to be turkey, right?
Yeah. Progresso Red Ants. Your mascot is a red ant.
I know Progresso. Don't they make like pizza sauce they or make something?
Soup, right?
That's right.
Now, this one's the one you're going to know.
Okay.
Springtown Porcupines.
Yep, yep. Right? That's just right north of us.
Yeah, Springtown's like 18 miles from here. There's a town called Winter, Texas, mm-hmm. and they are the Winter Blizzards.
Now, look, that's corny as hell, but I dig it.
Yeah.
I dig it.
What about the Grand View Zebras or now, Zebras if you're from South Africa?
Now, listen, this had a big, I've got history with that right there. So the fox that I used to work with and we've known forever and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
The fox is one of those guys that can tell you almost, him and his dad have played games since they were kids as far as, because his dad was a retired football coach from Springtown for like ever. And the fox is a retired football coach. They play the game of guess the high school mascots all through the state of Texas. And we had a fella that used to work with us, an older man, quite a bit older, that worked with us that liked to tell stories. And he claimed that when he was in Grandview, that I forgot what it was about the zebras, and he was telling them like the colors, the school colors and all that. And it wasn't black and white. Like it's like a purple and something else is what he was saying.
Purple and gold or
yeah,
something.
We were like, how is that a zebra? I mean, so it started, and I don't even know what their colors were, but I just know it started a whole argument at work for 6-8 months.
So you've heard of the Grandview Zebras?
Yes, I have.
So you can back these claims
up? Yes, yes.
The Mesquite Skeeters, the Hutto Hippos.
Hutto.
Hutto. Hutto Hippos.
I like that.
Calhoun Sand Crabs.
Oh, okay.
We got three more here. We got the Mason Punchers.
And I have
guess
a real
cow
good,
punchers,
I have a real good friend. That's where she's from, is Mason.
Okay.
Yeah. I've worked with her for quite some time. Talk to her all the time now. Yeah. That's where her and her family, that's where all from is Mason. The Mason Punchers. I'm going to have to text her.
Yeah.
And be like, hey.
Trent. They are the Trent Gorillas.
I like that.
Yeah, that's a good one. And finally, Roscoe. Roscoe, Texas. Their mascot is the Roscoe Plowboys.
Plowboys. Yeah, a lot of farming. Okay, I get it.
So very interesting.
First of all, they're everywhere, man. I mean, look at all the, what do we have, over 242 counties in the state of Texas?
Yeah, there's a lot.
Something like that. So, yeah, and then you start looking at all the schools in those counties. Look, we have a lot of football that goes on down here.
Yeah, very.
That's hilarious,
very silly.
Man. If y'all have got any good ones that's like some kind of crazy mascot, send it to us. Tell us about your mascot. Send us some, right? Tag us in some photos
Absolutely.
Of it or whatnot. I want to see some more crazy school mascots.
Absolutely.
Now, we have them. We used to have them separate, individual mascots for all the elementary schools.
Yes, we used to.
Remember? Because when Kyle and I were kids, all the elementary schools in this town were named after people that were in the Alamo. And then now it has changed. It's been named after some other folks and stuff like that as it's gone on. But we used to have individual mascots. Now everybody, I believe, are kangaroos now. I think they finally got everybody on board to be all kangaroos. They're trying to start that at an earlier age. But yeah.
Very, very fun.
That's great.
Well, if you have any stories you'd like to share with me and Cam and the listeners, please do not hesitate. You can email us at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 888-393-2783. Let's not forget about our sponsor, Microdose Gummies, is available nationwide. Go to microdose.com and use the promo code EXPANDED to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. That's about all the time we have for this episode of Expanded Perspectives. Till next time, folks, be safe. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.